And we're holding on Nun Bey's Ahmed Bey's five lines from the bottom. We were discussing various dinim involving Shemitah because the Mishnah had mentioned it. And like we said yesterday, whenever you have topics that are topics about Shemitah or more generally any topics in Seder Zroyim or in Seder Taros where there's no Gemara on those, then the Gemara takes the time to analyze them in detail because we're not going to have a Masechta. There's not going to be a defined Masechta to talk about them in the morning. So we're in the middle specifically of talking, we're in the middle of talking about a story. We said that the Rabbi Loi had cut down a tree during Shemitah that had unripe dates on it. And the question was, we were saying, one of the rules of Shemitah is, la'ochla v'la'lahef said, you're not allowed to do anything to ruin or damage fruit of Shemitah. Now, in this case, if you cut down the tree, obviously the fruit on it stops growing. So how was he allowed to do that? So we thought maybe these unripe dates, they're so unripe that they're not considered fruit yet. We brought something that says that no, even unripe fruit is considered, that even very unripe fruit, even at a very early stage of growth, it's already considered fruit as far as the halachas of Orla, and therefore that would apply also as far as Shemitah. We tried to say that the last thing we said then is that maybe that's only according to Rabbi Yossi. According to Rabbi Yossi, we would say that even fruit at such an early stage of development is already considered fruit. But the Chachamim would disagree with him, as we see that Rabbi Yossi says something like that as far as grapes. So therefore the Chachamim would disagree with him as far as grapes, and we would assume as far as other kinds of fruit as well. So therefore it would come out that according to the Chachamim, these kafniyosa, the Gemara calls them, which are unripe dates, would not be considered fruit, and therefore there'd be no problem if you cut down the tree containing them. However, so now this is where we're up to, five lines from the bottom of Nun Beis Amud Beis. Mas kiflod of Shimi min Hardah, or mi pligyud abonon aleid Rabbi Yossi b'shtari lanus. So if Shimi min Hardah says, what do you mean? You think the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yossi when it comes to other kinds of trees? So you're saying Rabbi Yossi would say, for example, Rabbi Yossi would say in the case of grapes, that once they're smadar, which is a very, very early stage in the growth, after the flower falls away and you can see the individual grapes, though they're tiny, Rabbi Yossi says that it's considered a pre, and the Chachamim would disagree. Do you think the Chachamim disagree when it comes to other trees? And here we're talking about other trees, because we're talking about a palm tree with dates. But we learn in another Mishnah. In Shviyas, at what point are you not allowed to cut down trees during Shemitah? Again, because you have the fruit on them has developed to the point where it's considered a pri, and therefore you have the thing of l'ochlo v'lo l'hesed that you're not allowed to do anything to damage that to damage that fruit or cause it to stop growing into fully mature fruit. So Bishama says the general rule is all other trees except for vines, all other trees, as soon as they put out something. Now Rashi says over here it means as soon as they put out leaves, which would be Nissan time. We learned this in brachas as well, in connection with the question of what bracha you make on unripe fruit like that. And they actually gave a different definition. It means once it starts producing fruit. Anyway, that's Bis Shammai. Okay, the halacha is usually not like Bis Shammai. But Bis Hillel, I mean, Bis Hillel says, and we know the halacha usually is like Bis Hillel, each tree has, each kind of fruit has its own defined time. Not like Bis Shammai says generically, Mishietziu, once it produces leaves or once it produces fruit. But rather, each tree individually, when the fruit reaches a certain stage. Hacharuvin, carobs, the rule would be Mishietzharu, once you have chains. Of carobs on them. Carobs are long and skinny, so you have at a very early stage in the growth of them, you have things hanging from the tree that look like chains. Those are the very unripe carobs, and at that point, basically, we're saying once they look like chains, then it's also to cut down the tree. Vagfanim mishiagriu, grapevines, the din would be you can't cut them down once the grapes have reached the stage of girua, which we're going to explain in a second what that is. The actual word Mashiach Griu, there's a the Gemara is going to define soon. The Gemara is going to define soon a size of it, but one of the explanations of what, there's a couple of explanations why that stage with grapes is called Mashiach Griu. One of them is Meloshin the Bartanura on the Mishnah and the Rambam and Pirush HaMishnayis explain it's Meloshin Gautinim, Meloshin seeds, because it's reached the point where seeds have developed inside the fruit. So even though the fruit is very immature, it still already has seeds in it. Olives, you're not allowed to cut them down. You're not allowed to cut down the olive tree once the nates grows on them. We talked about yesterday. We had in the case of dates, when dates first start growing, you have a kind of peel that grows around them, which the Gemara called matchali, and then afterwards it falls off as the dates mature. Here you have with olives something similar, that you have, there's a nates, which is like a crown-shaped thing that grows around them, and then later on it falls off as the olives mature. So once that crown thing develops, then they're mature enough already that you can't cut down the tree. You have to wait until the olives, mature, and only then can you cut it down. All other trees, Bishilol says, fine, we agree with Bishamai that once Yetziu, once they produce leaves of fruit, then you can't cut them down. And the Gemara continues, V'omer Abasi, who boiser, who girua, who pull halavan, that there's a concept, In some places, in these dinim of Shemitah, and in other dinim, in connection with Seder Zroim, we use the word boiser, which also means unripe grapes. So boiser is the same thing as girua, which we said the first word on the oven, Mashiach Griu, who pull halavan, and that is the same as a white bean. And the Gemara interjects, what do you mean, pull halavan, Socrates? What do you mean, white beans? We're talking here about grapes. What it means is it's the definition of Mashiach Griu and the definition of boiser is when it's the size of a white bean. Okay, so in other words, so grapes don't have to be fully mature in order to be considered fruit lahalacha as far as the dinim of Shemitah. They only have to be the size of a white bean and be Mashiach Griu, that they contain seeds in them. There's a different explanation also that Mashiach Griu means they're developed enough to have some juice in them. Whatever the case, uman shamat le da'ama boiser. Now boiser is a boiser and girua, which we're saying is all the same thing, is a later stage than smadar. So we said at the bottom of the previous Amud, we finished off yesterday, saying that Rabbi Yossi says once the grapes reach the stage of smadar, then they're considered a fruit. The Chachamim were saying or disagreeing, fine. But they're still saying there is some point when it, long before it's mature, where it's considered a pre. Uman shamat le da'ama boiser ein smadar loy. Now, who is it that's saying that that grapes are considered mature for these purposes only when they reach the stage of boiser and not the earlier stage of smadar? That would be Rabbanan. That would evidently be the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yossi. The Mishnah that we just quoted with the Machlokas Veshamai Veshilol is evidently not that Rabbi Yossi would have a different version of the Mishnah. The other Chachamim, this was their version of the Mishnah, that Veshilol says that grapes are considered mature for that are considered grown enough for that purpose, that you can't cut down the tree once the grapes reach the stage of boiser. Vikatani. Meanwhile, though, the Mishnah had used the expression shaukaloilanis mishiyetziu, that all other trees are considered, that the fruit is considered mature enough for this purpose when they start producing leaves, according to Rashi over here, or fruit, according to Rashi in Brachas. Whatever the case, the point is, so even if we say that, so fine, we're going to say the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yossi about grapes, but evidently they agree about most kinds of trees, including dates. So we're back to the question. And then that means that when Rabbi Loi cut down this tree, which had kafniyasa, which had unripe dates on it, according to everybody, both Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim, those are mature enough to already be considered fruit. So we're back to the question. The pasuk says la'ochla, and we say v'loy lahefsed, you're not allowed to damage or ruin Shemitah fruit. In this case, cutting down the tree ruins them because they're not going to grow anymore. So how was he allowed to do that? The answer is Elo Rabbi Loi bidinischoni cuts. The answer is Rabbi Loi, what he chopped down was a tree that produces nischoni. So Rashi describes like this. There are two different, some trees, all trees you have to have in order, you know, in order to produce fruit, just like it is with animals and just like it is with people, you need to have a male and a female. There are some trees and plants where you have male and female on the same tree. You have some male flowers, some female. Date palms are not like that. They have, there are male date palms and there are female date ones. We're going to talk about that in a couple of days. And Dr. Nivov, we're going to have more about that. So therefore, this tree that Rabbi Lloyd chopped down is a male palm tree. So all it grows is kafniyosa. So those are never going to mature into fully ripe dates. Only the female trees, if they're pollinated, are going to produce fully ripe dates. In this case, this was a male tree, so it wasn't going to happen anyway. So in that case, they're always going to stay. So therefore, so Rabbi Loi is not doing anything, is not harming them anything by cutting down the tree, because they're unripe now, and they're going to stay unripe because that's all they develop into. The tree over there, yeah. Okay. Some of the Rishonim have, instead of b'nisachoni, some of the Rishonim have a gusa without the ches, b'nisoni kots, which means, in other words, means the same thing, but it means, in other words, these things, they develop, these very early stage dates, develop in Nisan, and that's when the normal time is to cut them off the tree. So in that case, either way, the point is the same thing. Once they reach that stage, they're not going to grow anymore, so therefore there's nothing wrong with them cutting down the tree. Had it been a female tree, then yes, he would have had to wait until the dates mature completely, and then he could cut it down. Okay. Talking more about beer, so we talked about yesterday the idea that you have, there's the mitzvah of beer shvius, there's the machloikas rishonim, what exactly beer consists of, whether it actually consists of destroying the produce, or whether it consists of just putting it out as hefker, and then you can reacquire it afterwards. We have the Ravid saying there's both, there's an earlier stage and a later stage. Anyway, we also said yesterday that there are different regions of Eretz Yisrael as far as these dinim, because in different regions, the produce is gone from the fields at different times. And we also said that we said within each region there's different geographical areas, mountains, valleys, plains, and in each one you're allowed to eat the fruit until the last of that fruit in that region is gone. We said yesterday there's Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos. Let's say, for example, we say there's Eretz Yehuda. And within Yehuda, there's mountains, there's valleys, and there's plains. So does it mean that within Yehuda itself, if you're in the mountains of Yehuda, you're allowed to eat a certain kind of fruit as long as you have some of it in the plains? Or is it, even though it's a completely different geographical type area, as long as it's in the same region called Eretz Yehuda? Or according to Tosfos, it's not. We would say that you can only eat in the mountains of Yehuda until the point where you don't have any more of it in the mountains of Yehuda. So now the Gemara is going to give us a couple of species and times of them when the deadline comes for beer. It's a Tana Rabbanan. Oichlin va'anovim ad kiyichlu dolius shel oichel. You're allowed to eat grapes until there's no more grapes left on the dolios of oichel. Oichel, Rashi says, is the name of a place. Rashi brings a second gear so that the word might not be oichel, but rather ovel, which is a place mentioned in Sefer Shoftim, ovel kromim, where there are a lot of vineyards over there. Anyway, dolios are grapevines where instead of having them trail on the ground as usual, they have them trained onto a trellis or something like that. Like you have, a grapevine, the branches of it are not strong enough to be able to stand up by themselves like the branches of normal trees. So therefore, if you leave it by itself, they'll just sprawl all over the ground. But instead, what people do who grow grapevines is usually they take them and they train them to start climbing up onto a wall or a fence or a trellis or something like that. And they have little things attached to their little things that grow out of the branches that allow them to climb up it, sort of like the way it is with ivy and some other climbing plants like that. Uh-huh. Similar idea, yeah. So that's what they do. In other words, they put up a trellis like that. They put up a framework with of sticks and then wire and whatever, and then they train the vines to go on those, right? So once you reach the point where on the dolios, on these trained vines, in Oichel, which is the name of a place, where you don't have any grapes on them, at that point, then you can't eat grapes anymore. At that point, you have to do beer on grapes. However, the Braisa continues, Im Yeshmu Choras Mehen, if it so happens that there are ones that are on the trees later than that, then fine, you're still allowed to continue eating grapes. Because the fact is, again, we said yesterday the rule was, as long as there is available lachaya basada, then you're allowed to feed yourself and your behemoths in the house. And here, if there are other ones later, the one in Oichel, usually the ones on the trained vines in Oichel are the latest ones. But if you happen to have later ones, then fine, you can still eat until those later ones are gone as well. Similarly, similarly, you're allowed to eat olives until the last olives in Tekoya are gone. Tekoya is a place where they grew a lot of olives. In fact, Rashi refers to a Gemara in Menachos that says that was the place where they got the best quality oil. And also, the Gemara mentions over there, because they had a lot of oil over there, oil helps make a person smart. So therefore, we find that there were very wise people who came from there. You have a story in Shmuel Beis where Yoav needed a very wise woman, and he dafka sent for one from Tekoya. Rabbi Eliezer Oymek Ad Sheyichol Achron Shel Gush Cholov. Rabbi Eliezer says not Tekoya, but rather until the last olives are gone from Gush Cholov. Also, in Menachos over there, it tells a story about a guy from a place called Ludkia, where they needed a huge amount of oil. Rashi mentions it in the Psukim on Parshas Vezos Abracha, and he wound up in Gush Cholov, and there was a guy who was able to sell him a million dinars and more worth of oil just from his own orchards. So for the Menorah, they would get oil. That's what we're saying. The best oil they would get was from Tekoya. But the second best was from Gush Cholov, yeah. And the amount is, now what do we mean when the olives are gone? Kedeshiye oni yotze, where you reach the point where a poor person can go out to try to find olives that are still on the trees. The ene moite, loibe noifev, loibe ikre roiva, he won't be able to find either on the branches of the tree or even at the bottom of the trees after they've fallen off the trees, a roiva, a quarter of a kav of olives. So a kav is about 3 pounds, so a quarter of a kav is a lug, is a bit less than a pound. So when you reach the point where there are so few olives left that if this poor person is going around and looking for olives and he's not going to be able to find a log of olives, at that point we say the olives are gone, they're gone for the chaya, and therefore you have to get rid of them for the behemoth. Next, Oichlin begroigris, you're allowed to eat dried figs, ad sheichlu page beis hini, until the unripe figs of beis hini, which is again the name of a place, are gone. So again, those stay on the trees later than other ones. So therefore, until those are gone, then you're allowed to eat figs anywhere. Now, the question is, by the way, with all these things, what are we saying that there's a specific, what are we saying that there, that you, for example, until they're gone from Tekoya, until they're gone from Oichel or whatever, didn't we say before there were different arotzes, that there were different lands as far as beer? So one possibility is, of course, each of these things is within a particular land. Within whatever land Oichel is in, you can eat until they're gone from Oichel. Within whatever land Tekoya or Gush Cholov is in, you can eat until that point, etc. There is also, we mentioned yesterday, there's a Mishnah in Shviyas that gives an opinion that says that there are certain fruits among them which may be all, there are different yersois, but one possibility is that all of the ones we're mentioning over here, grapes and olives and figs, etc., where the din of beer for them is the same in all places. Unlike most fruits, where we said yesterday there would be different times depending what region of Eretz Yisrael you live in, that opinion in the Mishnah and some of the Rishonim and Paskin at Lalacha would be that these fruits are all the same everywhere. However, anyway, the Gemara is going to explain what the Gemara is going to explain over here once we go through this. So the point is, in other words, so we're saying that, so either we're saying within a certain region, within Eretz Yehuda, for example, Tekoya is the last place where there are olives, therefore you're allowed to eat till the olives of Tekoya are gone, or our Braisa is following the opinion that olives are the same anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore as long as there are olives in one place in Eretz Yisrael, then you're allowed to eat in all of them, unlike other fruits, unlike, let's say, bananas or avocados or whatever, where there you would have to go depending on the individual region. Because that's the thing, because we said the animals don't go very far, but the idea would be, in other words, according to that opinion, certain fruits grow slightly differently in different places, depending on the climate and the soil and whatever, as opposed to these fruits, we would say they're basically the same everywhere. An olive's an olive pretty much wherever you are, and therefore there's not that much of a difference that, according to that opinion, that we would say that if the animals in one place are not, or they may not physically go to the other place, but they could because they would find the same kind of olives there, more or less. Okay. Anyway, so the last one we said was that dried figs, you can rely on page beishini, the unripe figs of beishini, but the Gemara said, but the Braisa continues, Amar Rav Yehuda, lo huzkru page beishini elo le'inyan maaser. No, page beishini are not mentioned in halacha in this connection of shmita, in connection with beer. They're mentioned only in a different connection, namely maaser. The tnan, or okay, we take out the tnan, because it's all part of what Rav Yehuda is saying, that page beishini, the ahini, the tuvina, and also the unripe figs of beishini, and also the ahini, the unripe dates of tuvina, chayav and b'maiser, are chayav and maiser because they always, like we said before about Rebbe Loi and his tachniyasa, they always stay small and therefore they're always they're not going to mature anyway, so therefore, this is considered the Gemar Pri, and therefore they're Chayiv and Maiser. So the Yehuda says it, in other words, you, Tanakama, you heard of Page Beisini, and you're thinking that it's an example of where we can use that Shmiter is one of the examples where it comes into play. Rabbi Yehuda says no, only as far as Maiser and similar dinim. But not as far as Shmita. In other words, as far as Shmita, we would say that these Page Beishini are considered, in effect, a different kind of species than regular figs. So just like you can't say you can eat figs because there are still olives on the trees, or vice versa, the same way you couldn't say, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that because there are Page Beishini on the trees, therefore you can eat regular figs, no. So the answer was, we said in the end, because these kafniyasa were from a tree that is never, they're never going to mature more than that. It was a male tree, and they're never going to mature more than that. Yeah. The Braisa continues, Oichlin b'tmarim, you're allowed to eat dates during the year. All of this is talking about during the year after Shmita, by the way. Nowadays, these beer tables that I was mentioning yesterday, you have some of them where the beer is doing Shmita itself. For example, strawberries. You know, strawberries grow early in the summer. By the time you reach Tammuz of time, they're all gone. So at that point, beer for strawberries comes into effect. But I mean, all of these fruits that we're talking about over here in the Gemara, they all stay on the tree beyond Rosh Hashanah of the next year. So therefore, we're talking about olives. So most tree fruits, the rule is the ones that have Kedushas Shviyas are the ones that were less than one third grown when Rosh Hashanah of Shmita came. So let's say, for example, you have olives that started growing during Shmita, or that started growing just before Shmita, but then most of their growth was after Shmita began. So now, those olives, some of them, most of them are picked from the trees, but you have some that stay on the trees until sometime during the following year, Braisa is going to say in a minute, until Shavuos of the following year. And at that point, Shavuos of the following year, so let's say, for example, the last Shmita was Tufshin Ayin Hay, so olives that had Kedushas Shviyas then grew during some part of Tufshin Ayin Hay. Some of them were still on the trees up to Shavuos Tufshin Ayin Vav. At that point, Shavuos Tufshin Ayin Vav, if you have any olives or olive oil left of Shmita fruit, then you would have to do beer with it. That's the point. Okay. So the Braisa continues, Oichlin b'tmorim, you're allowed to eat dates during the year after Shmita, ad shed yichla ha'achrin shabit soyar, until the last ones in soyar are gone. We learned this yesterday. Soyar is south of the Dead Sea. It's a very warm area, and therefore the dates stay on the trees there longer than anywhere else. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, I agree with the basic thing, but Oichlin al shabein akipin, you can only eat as long as there are dates between the branches of the palm tree. You're not allowed to eat just because there are still some dates available that fell off the tree and got stuck between the thorns, between those jagged protrusions at the bottom of the tree, because neither you nor the chaya can easily get to them, because you're gonna get poked by the things. So therefore, that's not considered that it's available to the chaya. Okay, so thus far the Braisa. Now, so in other words, the Braisa, so this Braisa that we just quoted is saying for these various kinds of fruits that we just mentioned, that each one depends on when you have all the ones are gone from a certain region, from a certain place in Eretz Yisrael, a certain city in Eretz Yisrael, which is the last one to have them. So the Gemara says a Rumini, I have a contradiction. Another Braisa says, instead of giving times in terms of when you have, of when they're gone from a certain place, instead the Braisa gives them in terms of times of the year. Urchlin ba novim ada Pesach, you're allowed to eat grapes of Shemitah until Pesach of the year after. The Zeistim ada Atzeres, olives you're allowed to eat until Shavuos of the following year. Begrugris ada Chanukah, dried figs until Chanukah. Betmorim ada Purim, dates until Purim. Ba'omer Rabibi, and Rabibi tells us, by the way, Rabbi Yechanan Tauti Basraisa Machlif. Rabbi Yechanan agrees with that Braisa, but his version of the Braisa switches around the last two, that dried figs you can eat till Purim and dates until Chanukah. Whatever the case, the point is, so the pashtus, those aren't necessarily the same as, now you could have, so let's say for example with all, let's say for example with grapes, we're saying until Pesach, but who says maybe Pesach time there are still grapes available in Eichel, or vice versa, maybe the grapes are gone from Eichel long before Pesach, so why is this price of saying Pesach as a blanket statement without even knowing whether there are still grapes available in Eichel? It can depend on how the seasons are, right? Yeah. So in fact, so the answer, so the Gemara gives two answers. Aydi va'aydi chad shiuru. One answer is you could say it's the same shiur. When are the last grapes gone from Eichel is Pesach time generally. V'iboyesema, or another answer, hokatani behedya. After all, the Braisa says clearly, im yeshma uchoras mehen Eichlan aleim, as long as there are still later ones you are allowed to eat. So in other words, it extends the time, right? So you would say, in other words, you're allowed to eat until the ones from Eichel are gone, which usually is sometime before Pesach, but you could still have, if there are ones later available, then you have up to Pesach. So in other words, the idea is, so actually, for example, there's an explanation from Reb Shlomo Zalman in one of his Sfarim where he deals with these, he was a posik in Eretz Yisrael, as we know, so he had to deal with Dinim of Shemitah all the time. So he explains, in other words, the idea is, now we said you have to do beer. The thing is, you have to do beer at the proper time. You can't just, for example, randomly decide in the middle of Shemitah, one day I'm going to go do beer of this fruit. Because if you hold, like the Rambam, that beer means destroying it, you're not allowed to destroy Shemitah fruit unnecessarily. And if we hold, like Tosfos, that it just means making it Hefker, then what? Then you're going to reacquire it from Hefker right afterwards, and you're back to the same problem. When the actual time of beer comes, then you'd have to do it again. So he explains, in other words, that you have, like, there's a range of time. In other words, there comes a point where you have to be maskuit in order to be Makai in the midst of a beer. Then, after that, you can't reacquire it until you know for sure that the time of beer is over. So, in other words, let's say with grapes, you would have to be maskuit them come Pesach time. Now, there might still conceivably be grapes available someplace else in Eretz Yisrael at that time. So you would have to then wait until you know for a fact that there are no more grapes available anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, and then you could reacquire these things from Hefker. Actually, the truth, he says that actually what you could do is you could bring them back into your house, but say that you're not actually reacquiring them, that still you're physically keeping it in your house, but you're still considering a Hefker, that you don't own it. Whatever the case, the point, I mean, again, Shemitah nowadays is a Rabbanon, so you're able to do certain such callers. But, yeah, in other words, the idea is, it's not, so that's what we mean by mentioning Pesach versus mentioning the times when they're gone from the field. Come Pesach, you have to do beer, because at that point, it's likely that they're all gone. But in case there aren't, then you still have to wait another couple of weeks after that until they're for sure gone, and then you can reacquire them from Hefker. And you can eat them, but Bashar is the same as anybody else. I don't know, I guess, I mean, well, that's the thing. Reb Shlomo Zalman is saying that you can't, because you can't take them right back, because what if it's before the time of beer? What if there were still grapes available elsewhere in the fields after Pesach? And sometimes there are. So then that's the thing. So you have to be masking them, let's say, before Pesach, and only reacquire them, let's say, Rosh Chodesh Iyar. During those 2 weeks, they would have to be considered Hefker. So you can physically have them in your house. Whether you can eat them, I don't know. Lechora, once you eat them, then you're koneh them again, so I don't know. Well, but the point is, in other words, no, but fine. The point is, in other words, you're not actually meaning to reacquire it. So therefore, that can be good enough. You don't have to leave them sitting outside for 2 weeks. Is the point? Okay. Onward. Okay. So we're talking about the various regions in Eretz Yisrael. We mentioned the mountains, the valleys, the plains. So now the Gemara mentions something in this connection. So now we're done now with the discussion about Shemitah. So now we're moving on to another topic, and then we get to the next mission, which is a whole different thing. Tanya, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Simon Lahorim Milin. A simon of mountains is when you have oak trees. Milin actually means little growths that grow on the trees. They're called galls in English. One of the ingredients they use for surface ink is gallnut juice, which is extracted from these kinds of growths that grow on oak trees. You have the insects bite into the tree, the tree has sort of a, so to speak, an allergic reaction, and then it produces these bumps which have tannin in them, which is very good for making ink. Anyway, so when a simon from mountains is that oak tree, that these kinds of oak trees grow very well there. The implication is, though, that other trees don't grow as well there, which means, as we're going to say in a second, bikurim you have to only bring from the best quality trees. So therefore, trees that grow other kinds of trees other than oaks that grow in the mountains are not as good quality, therefore you don't bring bikurim from them. Simon la'amokim, a simon when you're in the valley. Dekolim is palm trees. Palm trees grow very well in valleys. Simon la'nacholim, a simon when you have a nachal. A nachal can mean a stream. It can also mean a valley. In fact, you have a machlokas sedashi ambam, when we say that they're going to say in a second, that the Eglah Arufa has to be done in Nahal Esan. What does Nahal Esan mean? Does it mean a valley with hard ground, which Rashi and most of the other Rishonim hold? Or does it mean a strongly flowing stream, as the Rambam, which is what the Rambam says? Yeah, I'm interested in a follow-up show of Rabbi Yaakov Emden discussing all of this and discussing, do we have proofs from the Gemara, from here and from other places, one way or the other.
Could you repeat that? I missed the, there was a glitch in the reception.
Okay, what we're saying is that a simon for a valley is a simon l'necholim konim. A simon for a nachal is when you have weeds growing over there. So a nachal, according to Rashi and most Rishonim, means a valley, and in particular with Eglah Arufa, it means that it has hard ground. And in the case of according to the Rambam, nachal means a strongly flowing river, and that's where you'd have to do the Eglah Arufa. So the Chacham Tzvi mentions in his Truva, on the face of it, doesn't this Gemara prove like Rashi? Because why would you need a simon for a river to see whether there's a river flowing over there? He says, Adarabba, where do reeds usually grow? Is it by a river? Reeds don't grow in dry land. So he says, though, actually, maybe what it is Rashi would understand that it means if you find dried out reeds over there. If you find, in other words, this place used to be a river, and now it's dried out, and therefore you have left dried, you have dried out reeds, then that shows there was a river there, and now it's a valley, and therefore it's suitable for the Eglah Arufa. Rabbi Yaakov Emden goes into it further in a truva of his. He mentions this truva, by the way, I wanted to discuss with my father, but I didn't have a chance to because I was away from home, very, very, very personal. But yeah, he adds over there that I was sent away from home, and if I didn't have a chance. And he goes on to mention a pasuk, and it seems like the Rambam and my father, the Chacham Tzvi, as great, as tremendous Tamar Chachamim as they were, even they forgot these things that are this pasuk and this Gemara in Nidia that I'm mentioning that bear on this. There is an interesting idea in order to reconcile the shittas of Rashi and the Rambam. The Torah Tmima argues maybe a nachal on this connection means what they call it in English. It comes from Arabic, actually. They call it a wadi. You have all over Eretz Yisrael, and in the areas near there, you have valleys where when it rains, then you have water flowing in them. But then after a while, the water dries up. It's not like the permanent rivers that you have in most places in the world. The only permanent river you have in Eretz Yisrael, the only real permanent river you have is the Yarden. So therefore, the idea would be, in other words, so you have these intermittent streams. In most, you have a few other streams in Eretz Yisrael, but most of them are intermittent. Most of them are, though. Yeah, though in the summer they dry. So they have, right. Right, so Tzfas, for example, you have, but in many other places in Eretz Yisrael, you don't. You just have these ones that are into their seasonal streams. So that's Nachal, there's no word Nachal Eisen into them. No, Nachal Eisen is in the Pasuk, but you also have a Pasuk in Omois, which is the Pasuk that Rabbi Yaakov Emden mentions, it's Zorko Kanachal Eisen, whatever, we could talk about that a while, but we need to get moving. So, anyway, I don't believe it says Nachal Eisen in Tillim, but if you find it, then show me. Okay, anyway. Eison Ezrach, that's something else. His name was Eison. Okay, onward. Simon l'shtei l'shikma, a simon when you're in the lowlands, like the area of Eretz Yisrael, like, for example, the area of Tel Aviv, Kfar Chabad, Beis Shemesh, that sort of area. Shikma is, you'll find a lot of shikma trees over there. A shikma, it's called in English sycamore. Rashi describes it's a tree that doesn't produce fruit. So actually, what they call nowadays shikma actually does produce fruit. It's a kind of figs, but they're like a very inferior species. So maybe Rashi means that this particular kind of shikma doesn't produce food at all, or maybe it means it's such a cheap kind of food that it barely counts. Anyway, but afal pishein raya l'dover. Now, even though there's no solid proof for this, that in the shvela you'll find shikma trees zeichel l'dover, you have a hint of it in a pasuk. Shenemar, talking about the wealth of Shlomo HaMelech, vayitin HaMelech has a kesef Yerushalayim kavonim. The king Shlomo made that silver was as common in Yerushalayim as stones, because everybody was so rich that silver was as cheap as stones. The eshar rozim, and as far as cedar trees, which again usually are very expensive, he made them as common in Yerushalayim as shikma trees in the shvela. So you see, there's a hint in this pasuk that you find a lot of shikma trees in the shvela area of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so now why do we need to know these things? Why is it important to know that a simon from mountains is milim and so forth? So simon lahorim milim, simon la'amokim to call him, nafkamina la bikurim. The nafkamina la'alocha is as far as bikurim. The tanan, ein mevin bikurim, el meshivas aminim. First of all, you only bring bikurim from the shivas aminim. And within that, v'loimid to call them shibaharim, you don't bring from palm trees that grow in the mountains, because those aren't very good quality. V'loimid peiris shibamokim, and not from other kinds of produce that grow in the valleys. Rashi says specifically peiros over here means grain. Grain that grows in the valleys is not really very good quality, because water pools over there, and so it makes the grain rot. So the best quality grain comes from the mountains, whereas the best quality dates come from the valleys. So therefore, it's important to know what's a mountain and what's a valley, la halacha, and you can tell it by what kind of trees grow there. Simon l'necholim konim, when we say that a simon for a valley is when weeds grow there, nafkamina l'nachal eisan, so that's the nafkamina. We just said for the nachal eisan, when you have to do the egla arufa in a nachal eisan, how do you know it's a nachal eisan if you see weeds over there? So again, according to Rashi and most Rishonim, it would mean you don't dafka have to have weeds over there. We're just saying that if you see weeds over there, you know for sure it's a nachal. Because it's a valley. According to the Rambam, it would be more. The Rambam doesn't bring this halacha, but still, according to the Rambam, it would be more dafka in order to make sure that you have a place with a fast flowing stream. You can expect to find kanim growing over there. And simon l'shvela shikma, when we say a simon for the lowlands is when you have shikma trees. Nafkamina l'mekach ha'memker, that's relevant as far as if somebody says, I'm selling you a piece of land in Shvela, then the expectation is that it's going to have shikma trees in it. So the Gemara says, Hashda de'osis lahachi. Well, now that you mention that point, then we don't need the other nafkaminas. I mean, the other nafkaminas are true la'alacha, but now you can just say, kulunami le'mekach ha'memker, the nafkamina for all four of these things that we said is all as far as mekach ha'memker. If Reuven says to Shimon, I'm selling you a piece of land on a mountain, then there have to be oak trees in it. If he says, I'm selling you a piece of land in a valley, then there have to be palm trees in it, etc. Then Neiri says, we don't mean like, you're not going to say all over the world. You don't have palm trees, obviously don't grow in valleys everywhere in the world. It means if we're talking about a valley in the parts of the world that's suitable to grow palm trees, then yeah. Not forget about Antarctica. Not let's say in New York. Yeah. Okay. The Chassam Sofer, by the way, has a drush thing about this, about these four simonim. He says the mountains over here represent Bali Gaiva, so therefore the simon for them is Milin, as in like all the words that they talk, the Gaivadic words that they talk, the Lashon Hara, etc. The valleys, he says, represent humble people. So there you find Dekolim, you find over there palm trees, which represent Tzadikim, Tzadik Hatamo Yifrach. The valleys which represent Torah, you'll find over there, because Torah is compared to water, so you'll find over there Kanim, which the Gemara tells us in Brachas that reeds represent Chachma. So where they're learning Torah, you can expect to find Chachma. And the last one, the Simon L'Shvela, he says Shvela, we had a few days ago, the Gemara mentioned Shuffle, means a lazy person. So a lazy person, what are you going to get out of him? A Shikma, a tree that has no fruit. Mishnah says, since we mentioned in the first Mishnah of the Perek the different minhagim about whether you're allowed to do work at a Pesach morning or not. So now we're going to talk more different minhagim that they have in different places. The Mishnah says, Mokum shenagru limker behema dakol anachrim, in places where the minhag is to sell small animals, sheep and goats, to goyim, mochrim, then you're allowed to sell it. Mokum shaloy nagru limker ain mochrim, but in places where they have the minhag not to sell them, then you're not allowed to sell them. Now, why would they have that? So let's learn the next part of the Mishnah, and then we'll understand. In all places, you're not allowed to sell them, behema gasa, meaning cattle, horses, etc. Agolim osiachin, whether you're talking about baby ones, whether you're talking about calves and ponies, or mature ones, shleimim oshvurim, or whether they have broken legs or whatever. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda matir b'shvura. Rabbi Yehuda says you're allowed to sell them a broken one with a broken leg. Ben Beseda matir b'sus, and Ben Beseda allows them to use specifically to sell them horses. Now the Gemara is not going to go into it over here because this Mishnah is in Masechta Avodah Zarah, and the Gemara discusses it in detail over there. What it is like this. The reason you're not allowed to sell Behema Gasa to the Goyim, the Gemara ends up saying over there, the main reason is because you may sell it to him right before Shabbos, and then you're going to call to the animal, and it's going to come. You're going to, like, make a noise to the animal to tell it to go, and then on Shabbos itself, you're being over, you're causing the animal to do Malacha because of your voice. You also may have, where you may then, if you're allowed to sell it to them, you may rent it to them or lend it to them, and then it's going to be doing malacha on Shabbos, and that's for sure you can't, because it's your animal. A Jew's animal has to be able to rest on Shabbos, after Vincha, etc., over Hemtecha. So therefore, the Chacham made a gzera not sell them behema gasa. Now, in some places, they extended that to behema daka as well, either because you might, once you're allowed to sell one, you might be allowed to sell the other. Also, the Gemara mentions a possibility over there, and some of the poskim accept it lahalacha, that another reason you might not be allowed to sell animals to goyim is because they're choshed on revia, that they may commit bestiality with it, and therefore you're making it possible for them to do an aveda. They could buy animals elsewhere, but still, it shouldn't be done with you. It shouldn't be done. On the other hand, the Gemara over there says not necessarily, because the goy knows that that's going to damage the animal, and therefore he's not going to do it. Whatever. Anyway, you can't let a guy watch your animal for that reason because of revere, right? But if you sell it to him, then right. But again, maybe the concern is that you may lend it to him or rent it to him, and he might do a revi on it. Whatever the case. Nowadays, it says in Shulchan Aruch, we're not nizher in this. And the Noisa Kalim, the Taz, and the Shach over there give a few different possible reasons why. One of them is just practically speaking, we live among the Goyim. We really can't help but do business with them. Otherwise, we can't make a living. But they also talk about different possible heterim. One of them being this business about that you may sell it right before Shabbos, and then you're going to make a noise to the animal, and it's going to walk because of you carrying the goy's burden. Nowadays, we're not such experts at whistling to animals like that and making them move, so there's less of a concern that he's going to move Davka because of your voice. Well, right, once it's in his property, then yeah, but we're talking about you may sell it to him right before Shabbos. Okay, anyway, we say Rabbi Yehuda is allowing you to sell an animal with broken legs because obviously then he can't use it for malacha because it has broken legs. Ben Beseda is allowing you to sell a horse because a horse, most of the time you use it for riding on. Chai noseh hatzmo, so it wouldn't be a malacha d'arais anyway. The maximum he's going to be doing with it usually would be a malacha d'rabbanon, and a malacha d'rabbanon, fine, you know, it's already the whole thing, it's only a shvus to shvus, right? You, they do, but in those days it was more common that they would use donkeys or mules to pull wagons and horses. Okay. Anyway, so again, the Gemara over here is not going to get into this because that's discussed in Masechta Avodah Zarah. But another example of a minhag of places where they have different minhagim, makom shenagru lechol tzli b'leil pesachim, in places where they have the minhag to eat roast meat on Pesach night, oichlin, and they're allowed to eat it. Makom shenagru shaloi lechol, in places where they have the minhag not to eat ein oichlin, then you are not allowed to eat it. We Ashkenazim have the minhag like the second one. We don't eat roast meat on Pesach, even as the Gemara is going to say, even though the Gemara is going to talk about it later in the Masechta. We don't even eat sleek keder. We don't even eat a pot roast. So the thing is like this. Those who have the minhag to eat it, they're doing it sort of like as a zecher for the Korban Pesach. Those who are not, it's because the other way around, it'll look like you're eating the Korban Pesach outside the Bais Mikdash. Okay. So now we're going to talk about that thing. The Gemara says, Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, A person is not allowed to say, this meat is for Pesach. Because then it looks like he's being makdish an animal, and he's eating kodshim outside the Besmikdash. There is some discussion, and Rashi says we're talking about over here, that it means not only if it's a live animal, but even if it's shechted already. Now, obviously, a shechted animal, you can't be designating for the Korban Pesach. But either the problem was that people, it's going to look like you designated it already while it was alive, and then shechted it outside the Besmikdash, which would be an Issur Kares, in fact. Or, the vort is, because Tosfos understands Rashi to be saying that you could conceivably sell it. You could be saying that I'm giving it Kedushas Damim, where then I'm going to sell this meat and use this animal and use this money to buy a Korban Pesach, and then when the person is eating the meat, then it looks like he's committing the Ilah. Okay. So you're not allowed to say this meat is for Pesach. Interesting point the Alter Rebbe mentions in Shulchan Aruch from the Magen Avraham, you're not allowed to say it's for Pesach for the reason that we're saying in the Gemara, but you're allowed to say, like you would say in Yiddish, Oif Pesach, that you would be allowed to, because then it's clear that you mean that it's on, meaning for the Yom Tov of Pesach. So in other words, the point is, but you shouldn't say for Pesach, instead you should say it's for Yom Tov. So, Amar Papa, Davka Bosso, said a Papa says this Davka applies to meat. Because again, even if it was shechted already, but it's still similar enough to kodshim, that it's going to look like maybe you were makdish the animal while it was alive. Avochiti loy, but not when it comes to wheat. The minto lepis chakama, because then all you mean is that you're saving this wheat, because you have to keep it kosher lepesach. You have to make sure it doesn't become chametz stick. So if you say, I'm keeping this wheat for Pesach, nobody is going to think that it means you were makdish it. Everybody's going to realize you mean I'm keeping it for the purpose of Pesach, because wheat, unlike everything else, has to stay Pesach stick, has to stay dry, right? In Shulchan Aruch it talks about would this din apply to other kinds of meat? Would it apply to meat of the kind would it apply only to the kind of meat that you could bring as a korban, namely sheep or goats? Would it apply to other kinds of meat as well? Would it apply to, let's say, even fish or chicken or whatever? So you have different details that it talks about that in Shulchan Aruch. It also mentions b'dieved, if you did, then the meat is still mutter to eat, although the Alter Rebbe mentions the Magen Avraham and the Bach are machmir, if you said it about an actual sheep or goat, that maybe it would be also, because then it really looks like kod shemachot. Okay. So the Gemara asks, so with meat, you're telling me you're not allowed to, with meat, you're telling me you're not allowed to say that it's l'Pesach. Basically, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Amar Rav Yosi, Todos ish Romi, Todos, a man of Rome, so he was the leader of the Jews in Rome in his times. Hinheges bnei Romi lechol gdoim mekulosin b'leilipsachim. He created a minhag in Rome that the Jews over there should eat on Pesach night a gdim mekulos. Gdim mekulos means a goat that's roasted in the same way as the Korban Pesach. They would put it on a spit, as we're going to learn in the seventh parak, and in particular, the word makulos means helmeted. What they would do is, like you have it, now you have, what do you do with the internal organs of the goat? If you leave them inside there, then it's like cooking them, and they have to be roasted. So therefore, so one day in the Mishnah, later on, in the seventh parak, is they would take them and put them on and wrap them around the spit near the head of the lamb. So you have the lamb is sitting over there on the spit. Then you have the kra'ayim and b'nei me'ayim also on the spit next to it. And the whole thing is roasted. So therefore it looks sort of like a soldier with his weapons, with his helmet and his weapons. And therefore it's called Zimakulas. So Todis Ishromi created a minhag in Rome that the Jews over there should do that. Either this was before the Korban and he wanted them to remember what it's like to bring a Korban Pesach, since they can't be in Eretz Yisrael, or it was after the Korban and again he wanted them to remember. Whatever the case, Sholchuloi, the Chachamim sent him a message, Il mole todes ata, if not for the fact that you are todes, and we'll see on Amud Beis what that means, there was something special about him, Gozaunu alacho nidui, we would have been gozer nidui, cherem on you. Shatamachal is a sort of kodshim achos, because you're causing Jewish people to eat kodshim outside the Besmikdash, outside of your shalayim. Now, so that's the Gemara asks, kodshim, what do you mean kodshim? Nobody was machdish these things. Ela ema, Korev lahachlis tzur kodshim machutz. It's similar to kodshim, and you're eating them outside the Beis Hamikdash. Now, the implication of that is makulas ein she'en makulas loy. The problem is only if it's a gdi makulas, implying that there's no problem if it's sam roasted. So even though now the Gemara is assuming that Ravid said any kind of meat could be confused with the korban pesach, and therefore if you say this meat is for pesach, then people are going to think that it means a Korban Pesach, but we see from this braisa that apparently that only applies to a Gdi Makulas. So apparently other meat would be allowed to say that it is La Pesach. So the answer is no. The answer is Amri. So they answered like this. Makulas, if he makes a Gdi Makulas, Loishna Omer, Loishna Loi Omer, doesn't matter whether he says this is for Pesach or whether he doesn't say. Either way, the fact that it's a Gdi Makulas and it's prepared in such a way that's so similar to the Korban Pesach, therefore that would be also anyway. She'enei Makulas, but if you're making it not a Gdi Makulas, then only Peirash in loy Peirash loy. Only if you say this meat is for Pesach is there a problem, but not if you don't say that. Not if you just say this meat is for Yom Tov, then there's we're not concerned that people are going to think that you're eating Kodesh Bachutz. So that's how, in the seventh parak of Amasechta, beginning on Daf Ayin Dalet, yeah, we're going to talk about how they roasted the Korban Pesach. Yeah, that's how they would do. They would roast it at home. They would bring the Korban. The Emurim, of course, are burnt on the Mizbeach. We're talking about, for example, let's say this is the stomach of the animal. The stomach is not part of the Emurim. But they don't leave it inside. They would take it out of the animal and put it on the spit and roast it that way. Because remember, the stomach is edible. If somebody has to eat it, right? Otherwise, it's nicer. They skinned it, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Rav Acha Masni. So we said on Amud Aleph, we quoted the story of Todas Ishroimi, and we said that Rav Yosi was the one who quoted that story. So Rav Acha Mastil Alahomastis and Kid of Shimon. Rav Acha's version of the Braisa was that it wasn't about Todas, was that it wasn't Rav Yosi who said it, it was Rav Shimon who said it. So Maskif Rav Sheshes, so Rav Sheshes asks on that, how could it be that this Braisa would go according to Rav Shimon? I can understand those who say that the Braisa is according to Rav Yosi, Nicha, then we understand very well. That fits with Rav Yosi's Shita. But if you say that this Braisa about Todas Ishroimi is according to Rav Shimon, is that good? How could that Braisa be worked out according to Rav Shimon? We learn in a Mishnah in Menachos, you have a case like this. We know if a person says, Harei Olai Mincha, then he's obligated to bring a Kohen Mincha. What if a person says, Harei olai mincha min hasa'orin? He says, I obligate to bring myself a korban mincha out of barley flour. Now, there are almost no menachos out of barley flour. The only ones are the mincha sa'omer and the mincha soita, and neither of those can be menadiv. Both of those you're required to bring. So the question is, what do we make him do? Do we say that he has to then bring a mincha made out of regular flour, out of regular wheat flour, or do we say he's potter completely? So Rav Shimon, so you have like this. The Tanakama over there says that once he said Harei Olai Mincha, that obligates him to bring a Mincha. The fact that afterwards he said Minas Seorin, we ignore that. We say Tfois Loshen Rishon, you go according to the first Loshen he said. He said, I obligate myself to bring a Mincha. Okay, then he's obligated to bring a Mincha, finished. The fact that he said Minas Seorin doesn't change that. Reb Shimon, on the other hand, says, Ask Gmar Adam Dvarav Adam Nitbas. Reb Shimon says we also have to look at the last thing he said. He continued and said Minas Sa'urin. So he thought that there is such a thing as a Minchas Sa'urim. Then when he discovers that there's no such thing, then it means he's completely potter. So now Rav Shimon is saying that Shaloi Hisnadiv Kederach HaMisnadbin, that since he didn't make an Adava the usual way, you can't, and there's no such thing as a Mincha of barley, then it's not considered a Neder at all. Applying that to our case over here, even with the Gdi Makulas, the fact is nobody called it a Pesach before it was shechted and roasted, and obviously you can't first designate it as a Pesach after it's shechted and roasted. So what's the problem? According to him, if we say the Brai says according to him, then why would he think that there was any problem? Why would the Chacham be telling Todas off and telling him you can't do that? How are you korev lahachos Yisrael korev machutz? If it's not kederach hamisnadvin, in order for it to be a korban pesach, they would have had to follow the rules and then say it's a korban pesach while the animal was alive. So obviously that shows the braisa can't be a coincidence of Yasi. Amale Ravina Lravashi, but then Ravina says to Ravashi, Umandatoni Laki Rav Yosi Minicha, Nu, and if you say that the Braisa is according to Rav Yosi, does it work out so easily either? Lachor Rav Yosi also doesn't hold that way. Because Rav Shimon v'shitas Rav Yosi Amra. As a matter of fact, Rav Shimon in that mission over there is following the shita of Rav Yosi. Dama af b'gvar dvar of Adam Nitvas, who says that we grab a person also based on what he says at the end. So in other words, this Rav Shimon is saying that we have to focus on the one hand he said Areyale Mincha, but on the other hand he said Minas Ha'orim. That would be according to Rav Yosi. Rav Yosi would be the one who says that we look at both parts of what he said. So therefore, so both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon Lachora would agree with this din. So nu, why is Rabbi Yossi quoting the story of Todesi? They were quoting to him also. There should be no problem. It's not Korav Lahachas Yisro Kodjim Machutz. So my love with Rabbi Shimon Savalak Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi Nami Savalak Rabbi Shimon, shouldn't we assume that what it means is, since Rabbi Shimon agrees with Rabbi Yossi, then it must be the other way around. Rabbi Yossi in turn agrees with Rabbi Shimon. And therefore, you would have, they both hold the same way, and therefore, so the Braisa wouldn't work out according to Rabbi Yosi either. The answer, I skipped a line over here. Ra'amar Rabbah, Rabbi Shimon b'shitas Rabbi Yosi, Amar da'amar afik mar dvar of Adam Nitmas. Rabbi Yosi says that you do also look at the end of what a person says. So my lab with Rabbi Shimon savalok Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yosi nami savalok Rabbi Shimon. So then it would mean that they both hold the same way. So the Braisa wouldn't work out according to either one of them. The answer is loy, not necessarily. Rabbi Yosi savalok Rabbi Yosi. Rabbi Shimon does hold like Rabbi Yosi that after gvar dvar of Adam Nitbas, and therefore he says in this case the person is not chayev to bring a mincha, but it's not the other way around. Loy Rabbi Yosi savalok Rabbi Shimon, but it's not the other way around. Rabbi Yosi does not agree with Rabbi Shimon. Because, on the other hand, Rabbi Yosi also says, like this, you have a different machloikas in Masech Tzmura if a person says two things. Suppose a person takes an animal and says, I want this animal to be a Tzmura of an Oila and a Tzmura of a Shlomim. So what do we say? Do we say it's only a Tzmura of an Oila, and we ignore the fact once it becomes a Tzmura of an Oila, then that's it, it can't become anything else? Or do we say we have to focus on both things that he said? So Rabbi Yosi says over there that Rabbi Yosi says that you have to look at what he actually had in mind. If he actually had in mind that this thing should be a tmura of both, then it's actually a tmura of both. Because the Gmar Dvar of Adam Nitmas, we have to look at the second thing he said, and it's physically impossible to say the two words tmuras Ola, tmuras Shlomim at the same time. So the only reason he said one first and then the other one is just because there's no other way to do it. So therefore we would say we focus on both of them. On the other hand, in Ark. So that's what tmura means, exchange. So in other words, now this animal has the din. It's a half oila, half shlomim, in effect. So therefore, you'd have to wait till it develops a mum and sell it and use half the money of it for an oila and half the money towards a shlomim. Anyway, the point is that on the other hand, in this case of the person says, Hareyala mincha sa'orim, Rabbi Yosi might say, that's fine, we do have to look at what he said second, but on the other hand, we also have a concept that ein odam moitzi dvarav levatala, a person doesn't just speak without meaning something. If a person is making a neder, he has to have meant something by it. So therefore, Rabbi Yosi would say, it's true we say we have to look at both halves of what we says, but unlike in the case of the tmura, where the second one doesn't negate the first one, it just adds to it. Instead of being only a tmuras oila, it's half tmuras oila and half tmuras shlomim. Fine, that can work. But here, if you say you look at both halves, it would mean his neder is not chal at all. Rabbi Yosi says you can't do that. In that case, you have to say, we have to apply a rule that says, ain't on a mozi dvar levatala. A person is not just going to speak without a purpose, not going to make a neder without a purpose. Therefore, we have to say, in this case, since the second part, that he means it to be out of barley, negates the first part, because there's no such thing as a mincha out of barley, then therefore it means we ignore the second part and focus only on the first one. So therefore, Rabbi Yosi would say that we don't say that we would say in that case he's chayev a korban mincha. Applying that to the story of Todos, that would mean Rabbi Yosi would say that yes, even though you're right, there's no way to actually be makdish korban pesach after it's shechted and after it's roasted, but it's close enough because if a person were to say if he had said Harei Zela Pesach before he had shechted it, then it would actually be considered a Korban Pesach. So therefore, even though they didn't actually say Harei Zela Pesach, but still, since it's roasted in the same way as a Korban Pesach, then it's Korev to Kodesh Machutz. So therefore, so the Braisa works out well. According to Rabbi Yossi, it wouldn't work out. According to Rabbi Shimon, though, because according to Rabbi Shimon, you would have to have, it would only be Kodshim, only if they actually said Hareza LaPesach. Okay. Iboilu. So now we have a question. Now we have a question on this story. We said that they said, the Chachamim, what time is it? Thank you. The Chachamim said to Todos, they said, if you weren't Todos, we would have put you in Nidui. Now, what is so special about Todos that they're not going to do that? Todos ish roimi, gavra rabba hava, oibala groipin hava. Was he a great person, a Tamar Chacham, and therefore they were going to say, we're not going to go first put you in Chayram, we're going to warn you first? Or was he a powerful person, and therefore they're afraid of putting him in Nidui because they're afraid of the repercussions? So Toshma, so we can prove from a Braisa that it says Oid Zoy Dorash Todas Ishroimi. Todas Ishroimi also darshan the following, and since we're going to quote a drasha from him, that shows he was a Talmud Chacham. So he says Ma Ro Hanani Mishol Ba'Azaria Shemasu Atzim Akudushas Hashem Lekiv Shana Eish. What did Hanani Mishol Ba'Azaria see? What brought them to be Moisen Nefesh for Kudushas Hashem and go and be thrown into the fiery furnace? Now, so the question is, what do you mean, what did they see? So Rashi explains, why didn't they darshan? The pasuk says, v'chai b'hem, meaning v'loisha yomus b'hem, so you should be able to be over on an avera in order to save your life. So why didn't they do that? Tosfos says, what are you talking about? This is v'fahesia, it's in front of at least 10 Jews, you're required to be moisa nefesh on any mitzvah. So Tosfos over here, and in a couple of other places, explains that this thing was not actually an Avodah Zarah. Nebuchadnezzar had put up a statue in honor of himself. It's not actually an Avodah Zarah, it's just in honor of the king. So therefore, bowing down to it wouldn't actually be Avodah Zarah. And in fact, the Gemara mentions in a couple of other places that if they had ripped them, instead of throwing them into a furnace, then the torture would have been so much, they would have bowed down to it. Because it wasn't Mitzvah Adin that they're required to anyway, it's only Midas Chidus. There's a couple of other explanations. Marsha says that the vote is that, first of all, there is an opinion of Rabbi Shmuel in the Gemara and Sanhedrin. Now, we know you have to be Moshe Nefesh either for the big three, Avodah Zarah, Gilad, Aisha, Shlichus Damim, or if it's Befahesia in front of 10 Jews. Marsha says Rabbi Shmuel in the Gemara there in Sanhedrin holds you don't have to be Moshe Nefesh not to worship Avodah Zarah, unless there's Befahesia. And here, there wasn't necessarily Befahesia. There weren't necessarily 10 Jews there. So that's another reason why if they held, like Rabbi Shmuel, they might not have had to go on Mesiris Nefesh. Goyim doesn't matter. What's it mean? It means 10 Jews. And there's a couple of the Mephoshim right here bring a point from a Medrash that actually the Medrash says that Hanani Mishal Vazariah, when asked the Novi Yechezkel what to do, he told them, what are you getting involved? Just run away and then you won't have a problem in the first place. And they said, Adrabba, we want to make a public Kiddush Hashem of it. Like this, if we're not there, everybody's going to think that everybody bowed down to the statue. Jews included. We want to demonstrate that Davka lo yuchav lo yishtachle. And so they wound up staying over there and they wound up getting thrown in the furnace. So the question is, why? Why didn't they just run away? Okay, so anyway, so why? Nosu kavachomer ba'atzman mitzvardim, they made a kavachomer from the frogs in today's Chumash. Yeah, very much Ashkacha brought this. Umat svardim shen mitzvun ar kiddush Hashem, madach frogs do not have a mitzvah of kiddush Hashem. And yet, Ksivbahu, the Pasuk says on them, they will come up and they'll come in to your houses, they'll come into your ovens and into your bowls where you knead dough. Now, why does it mention specifically Mishari Secha more than any other Kalim in the house? Amosai Mishares Mitsuyas Etzel Tanur, when do you have kneading bowls near the oven? Heavy Ema B'Shor Sha Tanur Cham. Dafka, when the oven is hot, you're getting ready to bake bread, so you're kneading dough in the bowl, and then you're getting ready to put it in the hot oven. So it means that the oven is already hot. So therefore, they're jumping into ovens that are hot. So the frogs did that, even though they're not mitzvah al kiddush Hashem. And in fact, Maharsha points out, even though frogs usually live in the water, usually fire is the last thing they would go into. But al kiddush Hashem, they did it anyway. So Hanani, Mishael, Azariah said to themselves, Onu shemitzvah al kiddush Hashem, we have a mitzvah of kiddush Hashem, alachas kama v'kama, how much more so that we have to go and be moisa nefesh and make a kiddush Hashem of it. So therefore, so the point is, we're quoting the statement that Todas Ishraimi said, an explanation in Toda, that shows that he was a Talmud Chacham. So that shows, when they said, if you weren't Todas, we would have put you in Nidui, that means that we're saying, because you're Todas, a Talmud Chacham, therefore we'll give you a break, and we're not going to put you in Nidui, we're just going to warn you, but if you keep this up, we will have to. As opposed to if he had been a regular person, or even if he had been a powerful rich person, a Bala Greipin, then they would have said, you know what, it doesn't matter, we still have to do what we have to do and not worry about the repercussions. Rabbi Yossi bar Oven Omer, Rabbi Yossi bar Oven says, here's another explanation of what was so great about Todas Ishraimi, not necessarily that he was so much of a Talmud Chacham, but Matu Malai Lekisha Talmud Chachamim Hoya. He used to give schora to Talmud Chachamim to invest, to earn money with it. So he would invest money with Talmud Chachamim so they could run a business. He would be like a venture capitalist to give them money so that they could start a business and be able to have parnasa from it and be able to continue learning Torah. So that was his schus, and in the schus of that is why they didn't put him in Nidui, and in the schus of that is also why he had the ability to come up with this explanation that we said about Hanani, Mishael, Azaria, and the frogs. The Amr of Yechanan, Kolam Mato Malai Lekis Tamar Chachamim, anybody who does that, who gives schora to Tamar Chachamim to earn parnasa with it, Zoych V'yoshev Yeshiva Shamayla, he will have the schus to sit in the Yeshiva Shamayla, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Ki B'tzela Chochma B'tzela Kosef, because in the shadow of Chochma, in the shadow of money, in other words, in the shadow, Rashi says, means in the Mechitza, in the place in Gan Eden, where the Chachamim go, is also where the ones who have money and gave it to the Chachamim to help them be able to earn parnasa, they go, so like a Yisachar Zvulun type thing, so he was like this Zvulun to the Talmud Chacham Yisachar, and therefore he had that schus, so therefore they didn't put him in Chayrim for this. Okay. Mishnah says, the next thing, as far as Minhagim in different places, Makam Shenagu Lahadlika, I wonder where everybody is, Makam Shenagu Lahadlika Seneh B'Leili Yom Kippurim, in places where they have the Minhag to light candles on Yom Kippur night, Madlikin, and they light them. Makam Shenagu Shalai Lahadlik Ein Madlikin, and in places where the Minhag is not to the Nado. Now, why is that? So it's like this. On the one hand, Yom Kippur is a Yom Tov. So on the face of it, you should be lighting candles just like you do every Yom Tov. The problem is like this. Yom Kippur is also B'tash Mishamita. So there's two ways of looking at it. One way of looking at it is if you have candles lit, then the husband is going to see his wife, and he's going to have a taiva for her, and they may end up having relations, and they're also to do that on Yom Kippur. The other way of looking at it is the other way around. If you have light, then he's going to see her, and then he may have a taiva for her, and the first explanation is that you want to have light over there, because you're not allowed to have relations where there's a light burning. When the light is on. So therefore, you have lights on, that'll prevent him from having Tashmish Amitah with her. The other way of looking at it is Adarabah, if you have lights over there, he's going to see her, he's going to have a taiva for her, he's going to say, you know what, never mind the light, we want to have relations anyway, and he's going to be over on the Issur of Yom Kippur. So either way, so in the different places, they're different Minhagim, both, as the Gemara is going to say, for the same purpose, but coming from opposite perspectives. Actually, it's interesting. So now the almost universal minhag nowadays is to light. I guess it is universal. I don't know. Is to light candles on Yom Kippur. It's sad that it is a Yom Tov and you have to honor it. But actually, you have what you're doing in the dining room. Yeah, but there are actually some rishonim who say you shouldn't make a bracha on it. Given that we're saying in the Mishnah over here it's a matter of minhag, you don't make a bracha on something that's a minhag. And also bifrat, you're not even eating by the light of them on Yom Kippur. So what's the purpose of them? But other rishonim say, and this is how it's passed in Mahalacha, that no, you do make a bracha on them, which is how we do la'adlik ne'er shol Yom Kippurim or shol Shabbos for Yom Kippurim in the case maybe. Yeah. Well, we say the whole tilam also, yeah, but we don't necessarily do that at home. Yeah.
Are you saying you shouldn't look at your wife on Yom Kippur? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Are we saying you shouldn't look at your wife on Yom Kippur? Well, if there's a possibility that it could lead to Tashmish, then no. So in some places, they have the minhag that if they have candles burning before after in the bedroom, then he's likely to see his wife, and they're likely to, yeah, but, yeah, the pashtus, I guess, if we're talking about out in the living room, let's say, there's less of an issue with it, because by the time they get to the bedroom, they're going to remember, but, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, what? What do you mean? Is it Is it you're not allowed? You are allowed? I mean...
So again, there's different menhagim. Different places have different menhagim, whether to light candles or not. But Pashas, you're allowed to see your wife, but in a place where there's concern that that might lead to Tashmish, then in some places, they would say you're not allowed to. And again, in other places, Adada, but they would say light candles, and that way, as long as the candle is burning, you know the din is you're not allowed to have Tashmish where there's candles burning anyway. So therefore, that'll prevent you. So as the Gemara is going to say, both groups meant l'shem shamayim. There's just different ways of accomplishing the same thing. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Umadlikin b'botik nisiyas. Now you do light candles in shuls because you need to daven over there, and obviously there's no concern of tashmish over there. Umabotim edroshes and in botim edroshes. Umavoyas hafelim and in dark alleyways so people can see where they're going. Va'gabe achodim and by sick people, all of those. It's not a matter of minhag. Those you definitely light on Yom Kippur, same as you would any other time. So the Gemara says, Tana, Bein Sha'omru Lahavik, Bein Sha'omru Lahavik, Lahavik, in both places, whether the minhag is to light candles or whether the minhag is not to light candles, Shneim, Ledavar Echa, Niskavnu, they both have the same purpose to prevent Tashmish from taking place on Yom Kippur. Amr of Yeshua, so Rabbi Yeshua says in this connection, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, it says on the side, Rabbi Yeshua Bereder Abhona, whatever. Anyway. Dorash Rava Darshan in this connection that when the pasuk says Va'amich Kulam Tzadikim La'olam Yeshuaretz, your entire nation, the whole Jewish people are Tzadikim, they'll forever inherit the land, meaning the Olam Haba. Here is an example where you have on the face of it they have opposite Minhagim, so the Chora, some of them are doing wrong. No, Bein Sha'amul Lahadik, Bein Sha'amul Shalei Lahadik, Shneim Le'Niskavnu Elo L'Davar Echad. Both of them have the same intention that there shouldn't be Tashmish Amita on Yom Kippur, and therefore both of them are Tzadikim because both of them are trying to accomplish the right thing.
So why don't we say that when a wife is nida, that's much more important, isn't it?
So when the wife is nida, you know that she's off limits. So then, you know, you see her, it's not a big deal. You know you have past the saloi, you know that eventually she's going to be tahor, then there's not as much of an issue. But Yom Kippur night, if she's tahor, and there's nothing preventing you except Yom Kippur, so you're likely to overlook that. You're likely to overlook that or forget that or whatever and go and do it. So therefore, the purpose of lighting or not lighting, as the case may be, is in order to avoid that. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow with a discussion about light as far as Yom Kippur. We're going to focus on Havdalah. On Havdalah, Motzi Yom Kippur, do you have light there or not? And then we're going to get into a long piece of Agadta about light and about different things that were created out of Shabbos Ben Hashmashas. Shabbat everyone.